right, so today's daf in Masechet Shabbat brought to you on this third night of the Omer from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Vav, which is a very special number. May it be a propitious entry into this new week. Okay, so the last thing that we were talking about was, and I think, you know, it might be good to just review just that very last piece. The question was whether there was enough time that was left over on Erev Shabbos after the last one of the tekiot to still light your candles for the next few seconds in case you had forgotten. And the logic of this was that, after all, the person, the Chazan HaKnesset, who was in charge of blowing, he would need to put the shofar away before he was able to be Mekabel Shabbos. And because of that, the Gemara got into an issue of whether it's actually okay. Somebody is not muted here. Is whether it was okay to actually carry a shofar on Shabbos or not. So that was the last thing that we had, and we could start from the words Lefi She'ein. This is three lines up from the bottom of the daf. And based Lefi She'ein Metatel Melo Et Hashofar. And that led us into a whole question of how to understand the Inyanim of Muktzeh. And of course, as it always turns out, these questions are actually an introduction to the issues of the next perek. So that we're already starting. We're going to mention already the three main shitas of Muktzeh. Let's try to get the camera cleaner. The three main issues of Muktzeh that we're getting into. And that will lead us directly into some of the important things in the next perek. So the first braita says, "Of you're not allowed to carry not a shofar and not a chatzotzra." A chatzotzra, the difference between the shofar and the chatzotzra, essentially for our purposes, is that the chatzotzra is shaped in a straight tube, whereas the shofar, because of the fact that it's kafuf, has space to keep liquids in it. Ask the Gemara, but there's another braita that says a shofar can be carried. It's only the chatzotzra that can't be carried. So we tried to make up yesterday the difference is between a yochid and a tzibur. A yochid is able to carry his shofar on Shabbos because the shofar is very useful as a baby bottle. So we have today these little baby cups, you know, they use the shofar. So they would have a little bit of water in the shofar. You could then use the tip of the shofar to give it to a baby and gradually tip out, the way we do with the baby cups today, gradually tip out a little bit of water into the baby's mouth. So for that, according to Rashi, that makes the shofar a kli shemalachtei leheter, even though obviously that wasn't the primary function of a shofar, but it was such a common usage that according to Rashi, it's not even a kli shemalachtei leiser at all. We'll see that there's a machlokas Rashi tells us in this as we go along. And you're not allowed to be metaltel the chatzotzra. But the second brisa is a steerer to the first brisa. So we said the yochid would have a private shofar. He would use it for a baby. But the tzibur, which is the one we're talking about over here, the Chazan HaKnesset, he would use the shofar for its designated purpose. And because of that, he wouldn't be allowed to move, and he had to be given extra time on Erev Shabbos. This is where we were up to. Akiva, you're missing two very important adjuncts. I see one behind you. The other one you're hiding, I know. But, you know, every once in a while we could, I see. Okay, I caught a little look. Yakira, good to have you. Okay, that's terrific. All right, so the question that we had left off with on the last time that we learned was that there should be really no difference. Because Amalei Abaye B'yochid L'mai Chazi, what is an individual shofar good for, that you're calling it a Kli Shemalachta L'Heter, according to Rashi? It's good as a baby cup. But then the truth is that since a tzibur is responsible to care for the poor, then the tzibur shofar is also perfectly good for that, because b'tzibur lami, it's the yochid is l'gamei b'mayim l'tinok, and the tzibur is for the same purpose, l'tinok ani. So it would also be chazi l'gamei l'tinok ani. So first of all, I don't like that. For that reason alone, I don't like it. Not to mention the fact that there's another braita that you're going to have to explain, and this doesn't make sense according to anything that you're saying so far, namely, v'tu adetanya, what about the other braita, third braita? K'shem shemetatelim et ha-shofar, kach metatelim et ha-chatzotzot. Here it says you can be metalto both of them. So now, how are we going to make sense of this? One brisa says you cannot be metalto, the shofar, or the chatzotra. One says you can be metalto, the shofar, but not the chatzotra. And one says you can be metalto, the shofar, and the chatzotra. So how do we explain it? Answers the Gemara Lokasha. The truth is that we have three very different shitot when it comes to the concept of muktza. And these three brightot represent these three shitot, and therefore everything is perfectly good. Ha Rebbe Yehuda, Ha Rebbe Shimon, and Ha Rebbe Nechemia. So, according to Rashi, the Rebbe Yehuda shita is that he's, as we saw before, he's the one who holds of muktza. When we say he holds of muktza, obviously, this is going, I mean, we don't paskin, you know, like Rebbe Yehuda. We paskin like Rebbe Shimon, who doesn't hold the muktza. So, you know, and when we say hold the muktza, we're talking about various levels of muktza. And we're going to see as we get along in the parak that's coming that there's really nine completely different issues of muktza that need to be taken into consideration. So let's not oversimplify and say he holds of muktza. But the point is that according to Rebbe Yehuda, if you have a kli, then you can be metalto a kli. But if you have a kli, you have something that's not a kli, you cannot be metalto. That's how Rashi understands it. And so it's very simple. So the shofar, because it's a kli, again, Rashi's approach, that even though it's not primarily used for this, but it's a kli that is so often used as a baby dispenser. So memele, it's metalto. Mashein ken the chatzotra is a kli shemalachto liyisr, because you're not allowed to make music on Shabbat. And because of that, it would not be usable on Shabbat at all. Whereas the one that says both of them are mutter, that's going aliba the Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe Shimon doesn't hold of muktza. Now again, when we say Rebbe Shimon doesn't hold of muktza, it's not really true. It's that he doesn't hold of a muktza that would prevent you to move something. If it's the Tzorach Gufo or the Tzorach Mekomo, we're going to see that there's a lot of different, there's not only nine levels of types of muktza, but there's many different levels of things that you would do with the muktza. And one of the most common, as you know, is Tzorach Gufo, something that you would want to use because, let's say it's a hammer, and you want to use a hammer to open some nuts on Shabbos. So even though normally a hammer is a kli shemalachto liyisr because you use it to bang in nails, but letzorach gufo would mean that you can use it to open up nuts. That would be one example. Another example is to move something letzorach mikomo. It is in a place where you want to use that place. You could move it from that place. And indeed, that's what Rebbe Shimon holds about the type of muktzah that we're talking about now, which is a kli shemalachto liyisr. There are other things that Rebbe Yehuda does hold or muktzah completely, and you wouldn't be allowed to move letzorach gufo, letzorach mikomo, but we'll get to those things later. However, to just move the shofar from one place to another because you're trying to protect it, which would be the question over here of the Chazana Knesset, would need to take his shofar to put it away somewhere so it wouldn't be damaged, that, in fact, would be usur, even according to Rebbe Shimon, because that's called, technically, I think it's time to start keeping another list of munachim like we did earlier, that's called, technically, mechama letzel. So far we've discussed three types of things that you do with muktza, that you could use letzorach gufo, muktza that could be moved letzorach mikomo, or muktza that could or could not be moved mechama letzel. And we've discussed one type of muktza so far, which is a muktza for something that is used for isur, which is called a kli shemalachto leisur. Okay. So this goes according to Rebbe Shimon, and that would be fine because according to Rebbe Shimon, you could move both of them. But the braita that says that you cannot move either of them, that is going according to Rebbe Nechemia. And Rebbe Nechemia holds that muktza is chal on any usage which is not the standard usage. So memela, you can't even use something that we would never think of as muktza, like, I don't know, a plate. Well, you can't move that plate for a non-standard usage, according to Rebbe Nechemia. That really puts tremendous burdens on muktza. So according to him, the non-standard usage which the shofar represents, if you want to use it, the gamea ba'atatinok, that would be usur also. So according to Rabbi Nechemia, it would explain why the Braita would say the same way you can't move a chatzotzra, you cannot move a shofar either. Now this is the very oversimplified approach of Rashi to this sugya, and Rashi is sometimes very careful to introduce a sugya in a simplified fashion so that we can absorb the details later on. Tosfos goes through the various issues over here, which this oversimplification really leaves out completely and is quite misleading, because the truth is that the idea, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you can't use the shofar is not quite true, because even though Rabbi Yehuda does hold of mukta, and he holds of the din of klisha malachto liyisr, he still holds that you can move a klisha malachto liyisr letzorach gufa, and Tosfos proves this. It's according to Rabbi Yehuda, the difference between the shofar and the chatzotzra is in degrees of how it is miyuchad for things that are different. So according to him, the idea is that a chatzotzra is considered to be osur even letzorach gufo, because it is so set aside for, I mean, nobody thinks of using the chatzotzra for anything but music. And even if you came up with some kind of way to use it as a straw or whatever, that would be such an unusual type of usage that this type of mukta machmas iser would be complete, as opposed to a mukta machmas iser that always has some alternative use built into it, which for that purpose, according to Tosfos, even Rabbi Yehuda would be made. And again, when Tosfos explains Rabbi Shimon, it's not like Rashi says, well, Rabbi Shimon says it's okay, there's no problem of mukta. It's not that there's no problem of mukta. It's that according to Rabbi Shimon, there's no difference between the shofar and the chatzotzra vis-a-vis the movement if you need to use it for something. But it certainly is mukta on its own, because it's a klisha malachto liyisr, which even Rabbi Shimon is made it to, as Tosfos proves from later on. Except that the distinction that according to Rabbi Yehuda exists, that, well, it's so fully set aside in your mind for Isser, does not exist according to Rabbi Shimon. So this is how Tosfos sees the difference. When it comes to Rabbi Nechemia, also Tosfos considers Rashi to be extremely oversimplified, because he brings rayas. I mean, he brings rayas from the very fact that according to Rabbi Nechemia, you would still be allowed to take off your dirty plates from the table on Shabbos, and why would that be mutter? If it wouldn't be mutter litzorach b'koma, he has to figure out some kind of a pshat. And so according to Tosfos, or I should say according to Rabbi Natan, the idea of Rabbi Nechemia is that he's matir a normal usage, but it does not have to be the maximally unique usage of the kli. And we're going to see much more of this machlokas later on. But this serves as a nice introduction to some of the fundamental questions of the ideas of mukta. Yeah, you can drink, Rabbanu. Drink. L'chaim. By the way, continues Abai, there's another issue over here which I just want to clarify, because now that I'm saying it's going a little libid, Rabbi Nechemia, that still doesn't explain the Braita. Because the Braita says that chatzotzra is the thing that is usur, right? If you're telling me you're not allowed to be metaltel even a shofar, then why in the world bother telling me you're not allowed to carry a chatzotzra? Obviously, even those who are matir the shofar asur the chatzotzra, so there's something wrong with the structure of the Braita no matter what. I just want to point out, says Abaye, that something has happened to the language in that words have become somehow twisted in their meaning to Ame Haaretz. And because of that, I want to give this as one of those examples. And it's because of this that the Braita had to state the way that it did, the shofar and then the chatzotzra, because people have started calling shofrot chatzotzrot and chatzotzrot shofrot. And it's important for me to make note of this. And that's really the reason the Braita did this, because otherwise they will get very confused if they're Ame Haaretz. So, my shofar nami, continues Abaya, The word shofar over here is the chatzotzra, as Rav Chista pointed out. The Omer Rav Chista, Anitlat mili ishtani shemayu, michi chorav beit hamikdash. There's been a breakdown in language from the time of the Churban, and people have gotten confused about certain words. So one of them is chatzotzra has become the shofra, and the shofra has become the chatzotzrata, this in Aramaic. So I just want to make it clear in this braita to people who are caught up with that language of the street. It's basically a slang. I say it this way so that you should be aware of that. The my nafkamina, well, make sure you don't use a shofra for the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. Use a chatzotzrata. Anyway, another thing is that the arava, which is kosher for the lulav, has become known now as a tzavtzifa, which is really not kosher for a lulav. The tzavtzifa has become known as the arava, which could certainly cause a lot of problems because the tzavtzifa has a slightly different shaped leaf, which is rounded, and it has a whitish branch as opposed to the reddish branch of the arava. L'may nafkabina, why is it important for me to know this? Well, to know what's kosher for a lulav, for heaven's sakes. And another thing that's become switched is the idea of a ptorah and a ptorata. So large tables used to be called a ptorah, and a small table, you know, little one, they always had the little ta at the end, you know, ptorata, you know, little table. But somehow or other, that has gotten flipped. And now the ptorata is called the ptorah, and the ptorah is called the ptorata. So you'll say, okay, what halacha is there about a big table, a little table? Well, there isn't any specific halacha, but there certainly could develop a specific halacha. Suppose you took an order on an internet site for 25 ptoratas, you know, and you deliver these little tables. Well, no, the ptorata now is a big table, so you could be sued. And therefore, the difference would be, l'may nafkamina, would be in terms of mekach u'memkach. That would be a difference for buying and selling, obviously. Omer Ravashi, Omer Abai, af anu nomar, I would add to the list of Rav Chista that the Huvlila has become known as the Beikasi, and the Beikasi has become known as the Huvlila, and this could make a tremendous nafkamina, because what happened over here is that there will be a nafkamina in terms of the kashrus of a treifa. So really, the wall, we'll see what these are in a moment. So the Beikasi is called the Beit HaKosot, is now called the Huvlila, and the Huvlila is now called the Beit HaKosot. So the nafkamina is tremendous, because the din is that if you find a needle embedded in the thick area, there's a thick wall to the Beit HaKosot. The Beit HaKosot is known as the reticulum, and that is an area that looks like, if you remember from Chulin, when you open it up, it looks like there's a bunch of little cups in it. And it's those little cups that form the chunks of food that the animal that's a ruminant is going to chew. So when we say it chews its cud, the cud is actually something that has been formed by its second stomach there. And it's now a solid piece that is made into a cud in these walls. So this is it has a very thick wall, and it's very active. And if there's a needle that is embedded in the thickness of the wall, if it hasn't gone all the way through, then it's not a treifa, because the wall is so thick that the thick coating on the outside is considered to be a sealant. Masha Einkein, and it's only Mishnei Tzadim treifa. Masha Einkein, the Huvlila. Now, the Huvlila has got a very thin kind of coating, and therefore that is called the hemsis. And there, it would actually be considered to be a dreifa if the needle is there, because it's not sealed. It's a question between Rashi and Tosfos how to learn over here. But in any event, thank you, Rav Barnea. In any event, the nafkamina would be l'gabi the dinim of dreifas. Omer Rav Ashi, I can come up with one of these things too. That's been driving me nuts. People now call Bovel Bursif, and they call Bursif Bovel. And that is a tremendously problematic thing. It is? Why? Who cares? L'may nafkamina. Nafkamina is legite nashim. So Rashi suggests that legite nashim is because you have to put in the correct place name of where the individual lives. And therefore, if you mention Bavel, which today would be called Bursif, you would not be the kosher name. Tosfos says that doesn't make any sense. Bavel and Bursif are the names of countries or counties. We never mention that as an identifier. And therefore, he takes Rashi's other pshat. Rashi's original pshat is that since there is a takona midrabbana, that if you bring a get from most places, you're going to have to report on the fact that you know that the person says b'fanai, the shliach says, I saw it signed in front of me. And because of that, you get to the issue of lishma, and he'll be able to testify that it was done properly lishma. However, places that are not places of a lot of education, like Bava was, a place like Bursif, for instance, which was called Bursif because it was just an empty pit in which nothing, no knowledge was left, a place like that does require the shliach to say b'fanai nechtam, b'fanai nechtam, whereas Bavel did not. And therefore, if a get comes today from Bavel, it is not from the Bavel that the Gemara was talking about. It's from Bursif. And therefore, the shliach would have to say b'fanai nechtav or b'fanai nechtam, and that makes a tremendous nafkemina lahalacha, hadron halacha b'meh madlikin. Richie? Perek. What mesechet? Perek. It's one of the things that changed since the Churban. Perek is a mesechet, and mesechet is a perek. I gotcha. Okie dokie. All right, so let's move on now to the opening of our next parak, which is also a continuation of some of the fundamental things that we've spoken about. Remember, we've been dealing with Erev Shabbos, Hachonas for Shabbos. We got to the different types of wicks, and from there we went into the problem of chitui, the problem of whether you might end up making a fire on Shabbos without thinking about it. And we talked about things that had hot coals, that Shema Yachate B'Gechalim. I just drank, Barnea. Shema Yachate B'Gechalim. And this parak discusses three very important questions that now allow us to focus on these issues. These three questions are as follows. A. Shihiya. Shihiya. Please mark that down in your list of munachim. Shihiya means to allow something to continue to cook on a fire after Shabbos has already come. So in other words, it started cooking before. Shiyah means to let it stay there. The other question is, which we've already raised earlier, Hatmana. Hatmana, which is zocha to a full perek after this one, which talks about the different types of Hatmana. Hatmana we discussed also in our perek recently, and that's the question of, are you allowed to put something around the food to keep it warm? Are you allowed to leave it on a fire and put something over it? Are you allowed to use a Dovra Mosi Fevel, only something that isn't Mosi Fevel? Can this be done before Shabbos when directly you're taking something off of the fire so it's very hot? We don't have to be chayshes. Maybe you'll be chay. Do you remember all of those sugyas? That was just a brief taste of the ideas of Hatmana. And the other question, which we have not raised yet, is the question of chazara. Chazara is the big problem. Chazara means when something has been taken off of a plata on Shabbos, can it be put back on to a plata on Shabbos? Now, that's yet a third question. Then we also have three different types of heating devices, which are not the three types that we may be used to, and that they have to be translated la'alocha into modern terms. But in the Gemara terms, we have a tanur, which is very hot. But the reason that it's very hot is because the fire is on the bottom, and the entire thing is sealed all around, and it is made in the shape of an upside-down cone, so it's a trapezoid. And because of that, it is going to be machzik its heat for a long time. And that means you have to really, really worry about the questions of chataya in it. The next one in terms of heat is actually what we're used to, we've been thinking about, especially from Kalim, is the kira, but that's two steps down. A kira, remember, has place for two pots to be put on it. It has like an open bottom where you can put in coals. And then on top, it has like holes where you put the pots down. A kupach is somewhere between the kira and the tanur in terms of heat. And that's because it only holds one pot, and therefore the heat is more concentrated, and these are the kelim. Now, we also have questions of the fuel. There are different types of fuel. Again, don't take these kelim too literally, because in terms of the poskim consider what we call a tanur to be the equivalent of a kira, because of the fact that it opens on its side, even though the things are put inside of it. So each thing has to be understood in translation in terms of its level of the hachzakat hachom, the amount of heat that it retains. And then we have different types of fuels. So we have fuels that burn out very quickly, and we have fuels that take a long time before they're completely extinguished. Taking all of that into consideration, our first Mishnah here in the Perek opens up confusing us as usual, which is what it's meant to do, because we're really not sure what it is talking about. Is it talking about allowing something to stay on the stove? Or is it talking about putting something back on the stove? On Shabbos, before Shabbos, like what exactly is going on? This the Gemara is going to have to clarify. And it turns out that there are two very different ways of understanding the Mishnah. And those different ways are the famous machlokas between Hananiah and the Chachamim. That machlokas is such an amazing machlokas that it continues on ad hayom, because it's not something that the Gemara finalizes. It's not even something that the Shulchan Aruch finalizes. And as we'll see, there are different shitas, both of which end up being brought by the Shulchan Aruch. This accounts for a lot of nafkaminas in terms of the anhaga of the Sfardim and the Ashkenazim. And this is one of the tough sugyas of Shabbos, halacha lemaisa. So let's open our rather opaque opening Mishnah, which, remember, sets out to confuse us by forcing us to deal with the different concepts. Kira. So now we're talking about the kira, which is the lowest level of heat holder. A kira shi sikua bekash ubegevava. Now, what did you use as a fuel in this kira? So if you use stubble or you use straw, things that basically they flame up, and then when they go out, that's it. There's nothing really left. You can't get it going again. And therefore, there isn't really any chashash that there's going to be something left that you could poke to get the fire going. The halacha over there is notnim alea tafshil. You can put a pot of cholent on it. Now, put on it when? Before Shabbos? After Shabbos? Was it on the plata? Am I putting it back on the plata? Oh, my God. I have no idea. Okay. So whatever it means, we'll have to figure out. But if you used a type of fuel that can be poked, such as a gefet or a tzim, so if you've got now the gefet is the leftover product of squeezed either sesame, Rashi brings here. Normally, we're talking about olives, or is what we usually refer to as gefet. But the truth is that any type of very energy-rich kind of leftover squeezed out fruit is considered to be gefet. So depending on what you're making it out of, that would be the gefet that we're talking about. So if you use that, then, or if you used obviously a real piece of wood, then you'd be in trouble. Because over there, what would happen would be that you would very possibly end up stoking it without even giving it a second thought. So if it goes out, there may well be a coal that's left in there that can be once again ignited by exposing it to oxygen. And that's usually what happens. The fire burns. And as it burns, it gets the top is now all covered with an ash, which makes it hard for the things under it to burn properly, not getting enough oxygen. So your natural inclination is to poke it, and then it starts burning. So if you have gefet uveitzim, then you cannot put anything on it. Again, we don't know what that means. Does it mean Erev Shabbos? You can't put anything on it. How long before Shabbos? We don't know. But anyway, you can't put anything on it unless you are goreif. Goreif means to actually take a shovel and take all of it out. Or if you damp it. If you damp it, you could put a bunch of used up ash over it, and that will starve the fire and put it out. Beit Shammai Omrim. Beit Shammai says, now, wait a second. You could only put on hot water. You can't put on a cholent. Chamin. Pour the Sfardim. Don't get confused. Chamin does not mean chamin. This is a very bad usage of the word, because achare hachurban of learning, chamin became tafshil. So it's one of those things that have been changed. The cholent turned into chamin. No. Chamin over here means hot water. Most you can do is put on hot water. You cannot put on a cholent, because hot water, all that's going to happen if you stoke the fire is that you're going to evaporate more water. Why would anybody want to evaporate his water? He just wants the water to stay warm, you know? So there we don't have any chashash that he's going to poke on something. Poke on what? I thought we're talking about that we took everything out. True. But Beit Shammai holds that we're not going to be even semich on your taking everything out. What if there's like a little coal in the corner or something? So because of that, if it's hot water that we're talking about, you're certainly not going to start looking around for something to poke to make the hot water hotter. But when it comes to a cholent, you very well may. Beit Hillel says makes no difference. It could be hot water. It could be cholent. Beit Shammai omrim, notlin avolomachzirin. Now, you can only take something off of your plata. You can't put something back on your plata, where Beit Hillel says you can even put something back on your plata. Now, the reason that I'm saying plata, of course, is because the plata is meant to achieve exactly what the kirash yisikua achieves. The plata is made in such a way that you do not have access to anything that could make it hotter. And it's because of that that we call it a plata. It's just a plain plate that is heated. But if there's any kind of temperature control on it, then you're talking about a kira that you could poke by turning the temperature control. That's not a plata. That's a fire. And that's exactly what the Mishnah is answering. But there's another big problem with the plata. And that is that Rashi, astonishingly, and nobody can figure out exactly why Rashi is doing this, Rashi, when he comes to explain why you need grifa, instead of simply saying what is clear from the Gemara all over, that grifa makes it impossible for you to do anything that could poke up a fire, and that's the problem of Shema Yachate, Rashi, he mentioned Shema Yachate B'Gicholim, but he throws in another point which is completely irrelevant to our sugya. And he says, Ad sheyigrofa gechalim mishum de mosif hevel. It adds heat. Now, as all the Rishonim point out, including Tosfos on the daf over here, mosif hevel is indeed one of the terminologies, it should be in your list of munachim, that is important, but it was only important vis-a-vis hatmana. To say, says Tosfos, that after your goreif ekira, that it is not mosif hevel, is ridiculous. Because it stays warm for another half an hour. And of course it's going to add, if you put insulation over it, it's going to get hotter and hotter and hotter. Which is exactly, of course, what happens with a plata. A plata is very much mosif hevel. It only deals with the question of shema yigrof. So we already get into a problem right here in the difference between Rashi and Tosfos' approach. To be continued as we have more exciting data from this perek. Ask the Gemara, okay, what is the Mishnah talking about? When it says lo yitain, what does lo yitain mean? Does lo yitain mean not to be machzir? You can't put it back on the plata? But if it was left there, you could leave it there, and maybe you could leave it there, afa pisha eno garufa eno katum. If you're just leaving it there, so then it doesn't bother us because you're not being Isaac with it in any way. You're not going near it. You're just allowing it to continue to cook from before Shabbos. And that is mutter according to Hananya. Umani Hananya, that would be going according to Hananya. The Tanya Hananya Omer. Koshu kemachal ben drusoi. Now, this was another term which we introduced earlier, and that is what is considered to be fully cooked, which is also a machlokas, separate machlokas. But now one of Hananya's important points is that once something is cooked one third, you remember the story of Ben Drusoi, a famous highway robber, and he was constantly on the run from the cops, and therefore he could not afford to take a long time to cook things up. And so he would cook just very quickly, basically, which was one third of the way that a normal person would cook it. And I think that's become pretty standard in the braai, right? I mean, if it's really bloody and you could barely get it into your mouth, then it's maybe kemachal ben drusoi, but the slightest bit more than that, shoot the waiter, right? So if that's the case, then tainis chananya machal ben drusoi is considered to be fully cooked. So if it's fully cooked, you're not going to want to wreck it anyway. So once it's kemachal ben drusoi, it's cooking from every Shabbos. You can allow it to stay on the kira. You don't have to do anything to the kira. You don't have to turn it off in a modern oven. You don't have to put out the fire by raking it out or damping the fire. That's one approach to the Mishnah. Or the Mishnah might mean lishot. So only if you want to leave something. So when it says to you, you can put it on the fire, it's talking about put it on the fire before Shabbos, and you can only leave it there if it's goro for katum. And for sure, you're not allowed to put it back on him. That's for sure. So e goro for katum, yes. V'ilo lo, v'koshikein la'achzir, there'd be no possibility that you could put it back on something because you wouldn't even be allowed to leave it. By the way, you'll note that la'achzir is not necessarily all that clear that la'achzir means la'achzir specifically on Shabbos. Indeed, there is a problem, even la'achzir on Erev Shabbos, which is weird because what would that mean? From the morning, if I start cooking something, it's now 9 o'clock in the morning, I took it off so it should, the children shouldn't get burned, I can't put it back on the fire? What is that supposed to mean, Bichlal? So those who learn that there's an Isra of Chazora on Erev Shabbos would have to understand that it means there's different approaches to what the shiur would be, but various shiurim close to Shabbos, built around the issue of the amount of time that would be left before Shabbos to actually cook this thing. The question is, does it mean to actually cook this thing from point zero, or to actually cook this thing fully from the point to which it's at? That's also a machlokas, which we'll get into. But as you can see, there's a lot of loose ends on this page. So everything has a lot of possible applications. But this is our basic question. Are we going like Hananya, who allows Shehiya, or are we going according to Chachamim, who prohibit Shehiya, unless you did Grifa or Katima? That's our question. Tashma, well, look at the way the Mishnah's constructed. How in the world could you be doubtful as to what it means? We have two parts in the Mishnah, right? We have the part about first, the opening statement, which doesn't say that there's any kind of machlokas. And then we start getting into a machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Well, I don't see how you're going to read it. Let's take a look how to read the Mishnah, okay? The Mishnah first says that the general idea, you need to do grifa and katima if you were using the type of fuel that will leave hot coal. Okay. So let's try to read the Mishnah together and see how it works. The Mishnah says, Beit Shammai Omrim, the second part, Chamin Avolo Tafshil, Ubeit Hillel Omrim, Chamin Vitafshil. Okay, that's fair, but what about the next piece? Beit Shammai Omrim Notlin Avolo Machzirin, you could take it off of the plata, but you can't put it back on the plata. Ubeit Hillel Omrim Af Machzirin. Okay, so now let me read the Mishnah with you by inserting the two possibilities that you raised, okay? Let's take the possibility that we're talking about in order to be shohet. Now, it's not going like Hananya, and we're learning that you cannot even allow it to stay on the top of your kira unless you cleared out the fire before Shabbos. Okay, so here's how I would read the Mishnah with that understanding. So if you learn that way, I think it makes sense. Because Yamrit Bishlam Alishotanan, let's read the Mishnah. We start the Mishnah. Kira Shisikua Bakashu Begavava. You're allowed to leave things on it from Erev Shabbos into Shabbos, and it's not a problem. But if it was cooked, initially it was heated with something that retains heat, like Gefet or Eitzim, no, then you can't even leave it unless you were Goreif, or unless you were kotein by putting ash over it. Now, we have a machlokas about how to understand the opening of the Mishnah. What are you allowed to be masheh under those circumstances? Well, Beit Shammai says, even under those circumstances, you can only leave on hot water, but you cannot leave on a cholent. And Beit Hillel says, it doesn't matter. You could leave on hot water and a cholent. Now, just like there's a machlokas in the first part of the Mishnah about whether you're allowed to leave things on between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, there's also a machlokas about whether you'd be allowed to put things back on. So, Kishem Kiech, the Pligi Belishot, Pligi Nami Belachzir, Beit Shammai says, look, even when it says you can leave things on the plot, that means you can leave things and take them off. And even then, it's only water. But if you took your water off, you can't put it back on. Whereas Beit Hillel says, no, you'd even be allowed to put it back on. Okay, that makes sense out of the Mishnah. Now let's try to fit in the other approach, and you'll see it makes no sense at all. Because if you're going to learn that the opening part of the Mishnah was saying, you're allowed to put something back on the fire if you had been gorum vekotemit before Shabbos. Now here, gentlemen, is the reason that chazora would mean before Shabbos. Because if it means on Shabbos, how could it say yiktom? How could it say yigro if it's Shabbos? You can't do that now. It should have said unless you had been goreif, unless you had been kotein. Since it says achi yigro until you do it, obviously it would mean you're not allowed to be machzer even before Shabbos unless you now go ahead and you put out the fire completely, right? That shows that there must be some period close to Shabbos in which you can't even put something that had been cooking, you can't put it back on the fire. You have to first turn off the fire, be gorim mekot in the fire. So the language is mechayev that we're talking about even this. So let's try to fit the words into the mission, okay? So you're going to say lagzir. So if it had a type of fuel that does not maintain any heat after it goes out, then you're even allowed to put back a tafshir, you could put your cholent back on. But if it was heated, then you're allowed to leave it there, but you can't put it back on, unless you were goreif and kotein, or kotein. Now, next piece of the Mishnah. Okay, first line works out fine. What are you allowed to put back on? Says Beit Shammai. Well, even in circumstances where you could put it back on, it would only be water. You certainly cannot put your cholent back on. Beit Hillel says you could put on even your cholent, water or cholent. Now, I challenge you to figure out these next words. Beit Shammai Omrim. Beit Shammai now repeats. Notlin, you can only take things off, but you can't put them back on. What in the world is that supposed to mean? You can't put what back on? You just said you can't put cholent back on. It can't mean you can't put water back on because Shammai said you could put water back on the way that we said it. So therefore, the last statement of Shammai is saying absolutely nothing. It's simply repeating what he said at the beginning. The Mishnah itself was talking about putting back on. And Shammai said, what can you put back on? Hot water. Comes along Shammai now to add the brilliant point, and you can only put back on hot water, not cholent. Thank you. You said that. There'd be no difference between the first statement of Beit Shammai and the second statement of Beit Shammai. Hotu lamali. So why do I need to repeat it? Therefore, the Mishnah does not really bear the understanding that you were thinking that maybe it was going according to Hananya, and it was only talking about Chazorah. So I don't understand, why are you asking? How would you intend to read the Mishnah, for heaven's sakes, if this was not the way that we were meant to read it and that it's not going like Chananya. It doesn't make any sense at all to me. Says the Gemara, well, now, wait a minute. There is a possibility. Suppose it were going like Chananya, and the Mishnah was saying Lishot is mutter completely. And we're talking about over here only Chazara. And if you want to put something back on, that then you would have to turn it off, the fire. Okay? Then we could read the Mishnah by adding a few words. So La'olam emelech alahachzir tanan. It could very well mean putting it back on, but it's missing a few words. V'chisurim mechaz, orchen katani. You have a kira. You use kash begavava. Then you could be machzir anything on it. Machzir la'atavsh. If you use gefet ve'etzim, lo yachzir, you can't put it back on the way we suggested, all according to Chananya, who allows you to be shoah without doing anything of the grifa, anything of the ketima. If you want to put it back on, then you would have to be goref or achayiten es ha'efer. Avol lishot mashin, but you could certainly leave things on it, because this is Chananya, and you could leave things on it. Afapisha eno gorufa eno katum. Now, if you insert those words, that means that the machlokas of Shammai veHillel would not be referring to what you can be machzir. They would be referring to what you can be mashhet. And therefore, mahein mashin, what would be mutter to leave? Says Beit Shammai, oh, no, even according to Chananya, the most you can be mashhet is hot water. You would not be allowed to leave your cholent on the fire. Whereas Beit Hillel would say, no, you can even leave your cholent on the fire. And now the second statement between Shammai and Beit Hillel would be this. Okay, but getting back to the din of Chazorah, where we said you could be machzir if you had put out the fire completely. Now, that's not true according to everybody. Ha-chazorah da'armilcha, that was only true according to Beit Hillel. Lav divrei ha-kolhi, ela machloket Beit Shammai u-Beit Hillel. And now get back to the Mishnah. She Beit Shammai omri. Beit Shammai says, look, you can never be machzir, man. We're only talking about being mashe. So you can be no-tell, but you cannot be machzir ever. Whereas Beit Hillel omrim, af machzirim. So we could have a Mishnah that would be working out according to Chananya. And as a matter of fact, as we're going to see later in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, why would we want to do such a complex kind of reading of the Mishnah to make it work out like Chananya? That's because early on in the Masechet, we seem to have taken Chananya's approach for granted. And this we're going to get to soon, up ahead. Okay, so once again, gentlemen, we've got a lot of new ideas that need to be remembered. We have a lot of new ideas from Muktzah, the three-way, very important machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Nechemiah. We have different usages, which is Gufo, Mekomo, Bicham Aletzel, and we have a machlokas Rashi and Tosis of precisely how to understand the three shitas of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Nechemiah. And in this parak, we've introduced already some very important things. We have three levels of heat-retaining containers, which is the tanur, the kira, the kupach, actually in that order, the tanur, the kupach, and the kira in that order. We have different types of fuel, such as kash v'gavava, that doesn't leave any type of pokeable ash, or we could have things like gefet and etzim, that certainly does. We have the very important machlokas between Chananya and the Chachamim as to whether shehiyah is muteret, even with a flame still burning, and whether chazora requires the putting the flame out, or whether actually, even shehiyah would require putting the flame out in order for you to have it. Then we had the discussions about where would chazara be mutter, how far before Shabbos would there be a problem of chazara, and some other hints of exciting issues to come. So if you have a chance to review this before tomorrow morning, when we will go continue on, and you certainly don't want to get confused, that it's important to get all of the terminology absolutely clear, and that was the Mosif Heva, which we had from before, and the Shema Yachta Begecholim, which we had from before, Grief of a Ketima, which is new here. All of those things worthwhile getting straight. The machlokes chananim and chachamim, worthwhile getting straight. And the possible two very different approaches to the Mishnah, worth getting straight. Take a little bit of time. You've got time in the morning because we don't do our daf until 9:30 tomorrow. And therefore, I hope to find you all excited and ready for Moadim L'Simcha once again on the third day of the Omer so that we can have another daf. Hope everybody had a grand Shabbos. Everyone looks well, Baruch Hashem. It's difficult being away from 3 days from people that you worry about. So, Baruch Hashem, good to see you all. Kol Tov, everybody. Keep it going. Kol Tov. Moadim L'Simcha, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason, Bezrat Hashem.